Chapter 15, Day 265. Western District Theater, 10:02. The intake of wounded had filled the infirmaries of Theater to bursting. Jagdeer had been transferred right across the city to a HAB clinic in the Western Districts, a four-story pile of rotting brick that had been, over the years, a sanatorium, a refuge, and a scolam for wayward youths. The building was in poor repair. The air reeked of disinfectant and mildew. Blanche found her at the end of a long, grim gallery, gazing out of the windows onto a street where files of civilians were waiting in the rain for travel permits. She looked pale and thin. Her left arm was bound up in a heavy sling. Blanche noticed that under her dressing gown she still wore the trousers of her flight suit. "Hey, Mel," she said.
"Bree, how's the arm?"
"Okay. Another day or two, they reckon."
"We miss you. The wing all send their best."
"Keeping them in line, I hope?"
"They wouldn't dare mess with me,"
she grinned. "Want a seat?" she said, getting up out of her bath chair.
"I'm fine,"
he said. "Sit down, Mill. You look fit to drop. I've been sitting all day." Shrugging, he sat down in the old, wheeled invalid chair. He settled back, elbows out.
"So, how are these for speed?"
he asked. She leaned against the wall by the window and gestured down the long, lino-floored hall with her good hand. "Try it out. Not much reheat, but if you really push it, you can achieve lift by the time you reach the dispensary." Using his hands, he milled the big hand wheels back and forth. "How's it been?" she asked.
"We've been up once. A nasty tangle over St. Croix's. Aggie stung one, and so did I."
"All safe?"
"A hard round went through Zimmick's side pain and snapped his chain of lucky charms, so he's really low. But yes, all safe."
"Cordial?"
"Fixed up, and fit for the next sortie."
"How's my baby 02?
"A mess, Bree. But she'll live. They're working on her now, but she'll have to be shipped by carrier to..."
Blanche stopped.
"Damn," he said. "And there I was going to break it to you gently."
"Shipped out?" asked Jagdeer. "Since when?"
"Since 0600 hours this morning. Navy directive. Apparently Ornoff's decided it's time to quit the coast."
"Where to?"
"For us, Lucerna MAB in the midwinters. That's need to know, obviously."
"Of course."
"The mass land evac is now well underway. Theater's almost empty, the population fleeing. We're giving ground. From the islands, we can keep our bases out of strike range of the enemy for a while and keep them off the evac fleets. Thrown alive, Bree, you've never seen so many mass barges."
"I like islands," said Jagdeer thoughtfully. "They remind me of home."
"We're flying the bolts out at 0900 on the 268th. 3 days from now, situation permitting. Your bird will be packed off this afternoon on one of the freight barges."
"Don't you bloody leave me here," Jagdeer said.
"Of course not, Bree. I'll arrange a transport to collect you, maybe around 0830 that morning. The Navy will be scooping off personnel using Valkyries and Oneros. You'll be with us by noon."
"I'd better be," Jagdeer warned. "I don't want to die here in this dump."
"Oh, trust me," said Blanche.
He was still rolling to and fro in the bath chair, playing like a child.
"When have I ever let you down?"
"Never," she replied.
"You see."
"What about a spare?" she asked.
"Already gone north. Medicaid evac. I checked. He's in a care unit in Enothopolis as we speak."
Blanche got up out of the chair and rolled it around for her to sit again.
"I should go," he said. "We're due up at 1100 hours, and my ride is waiting."
"Good flying," she said.
"Take care of yourself."
Blanche paused.
"Well, well. Looks like you've got another visitor."
Jagdeer looked around. Wing leader Seacan, splendid in his white suede coat, was coming down the hallway.
"Friends in high places,"
Blanche said. He walked away, giving Seacan a salute as he passed him. Seacan returned it respectfully, and then walked on to join Jagdeer under the stained, aged window. She remained standing.
"Leader?"
"Commander.
How are you?"
"Alive. I didn't expect to see you here." Seacan shrugged. "Have a seat," Jagdeer suggested, nodding her head towards the bath chair.
"I'm fine, Commander. I came for two reasons."
"Did you know?"
"The first is as a matter of courtesy, from one flight leader to another. Major Luda Ramier of the Apostles was lost in action last night."
"I'm sorry to hear that, leader." Seacan cleared his throat, awkward.
"I intend to offer his place to Flight Lieutenant Larice Ash. Her record, especially in recent days, has been remarkable. 10 kills in 1 sortie.
10 indeed.
I wanted to ask your permission, Commander.
My permission? Before I ask her?
Jagdeer limped over to the bath chair and sat down in it. She felt dazed, hurt, as if something precious had been stolen from her.
Larice is one of my...
She stopped and corrected. Larice Ash is my best pilot.
I will miss her,
but I know the form. The apostles ask, you don't refuse. I'm flattered you even ran it past me at all. Larice will be overjoyed. It's an honour. Of course she'll accept. The first Fantine aviator to make the apostle grade.
The first female, Seacan said.
Not a distinction we ever made on Fantine, sir.
The Navy is rather old-fashioned, mademoiselle, he smiled.
So I have your permission?
Jagdeer shook her head and chuckled. It's as if you're asking me for her hand in marriage.
I am, in a way. Till death parts us.
Jagdeer looked up at him. Make her a hero. A legend. That's all she wants, Seacan.
That's all I want for her.
I will, he said.
Thank you.
What's the second reason? She asked.
Pardon me?
You said you'd come here for 2 reasons. You've robbed away my best wingman. I dread to think what the other cause is.
I merely wanted to inquire after your health. I was concerned when I heard the news.
I thought you apostles didn't care about injury or death.
We just don't care about each other, he said.
He looked round for a moment.
I must be getting along. May the Emperor protect you, Commander,
she nodded. Only when he was out of sight down the length of the long hallway did she notice the long-stemmed bloom, its petals a rich imperial purple, that he had left on the window's sill.
Langersville, 1516. From the hills above the foreshore, it looked as if parts of the coastline were breaking off and drifting out to sea. Le Guin's convoy had reached the headland, and was now crawling down into the seaport, just one small part of the teeming forces seeking evacuation. Threatening skies drifted above them, and a brisk sea breeze washed them. Schools of Valkyries burned off fields on the lower slopes, heading out to sea. Viltry could see Oneros prepping for takeoff. At the docks, VTRPs, pontoons, and mass barges slugged away from the shore. The mass barges were enormous cargo ships, belching smoke from their stacks, their open bellies laden with armor and carriers. As they plied out into the deeper waters, others, riding light and empty, were piloted into the dock quays. The VTRP's vertical thrust raft platforms were colossal. Each one was an armored rectangle 5 hectares square, suspended over the water by monumental vector engines at the corners and edges. As they slid up to the quays and dropped their metal ramps, squadrons of armor rolled onto them. The noise of their thrusters filled the bay. Marshals directed the boarding armor to their stands, lining them up. An entire regiment's strength could be swallowed onto one raft. Humming like monsters, laden VTRPs gusted out into the open sea.
That's our ride, said Le Guin.
Viltry nodded.
Theda, how far do you think?
Le Guin consulted his chart slate.
About 300 kilometers east. Why?
Time I got going, Viltry said.
Le Guin frowned.
We'll miss you, Osk.
You too. It's been quite an experience.
Viltry shook Le Guin by the hand. As Viltry got down off the tank, Matrides hugged him, and Emdeen slapped his arm.
Good luck,
Viltry shouted as the line of death began to roll forward.
And to you,
yelled back Le Guin.
The Emperor protects.
Le Guin said something, but the racing engines blotted it out. Viltry stood on the hillside for a while as the slow column threaded past him and Le Guin's tank was out of sight. Then he ran down the grassy bank towards the coastal highway and began to flag down the Munitorum transports speeding east.
Theda MAB, south, 1610. As soon as his skids settled on the hardstand, Markwell killed the fans and let the ground take the 14 tons of Serial 99 Double Eagle. He sat for a moment, canopy still locked, his head resting back against the seat and his eyes closed. They'd just run their 3rd sortie of the day, a snap call-up and into a bomber pack. Brief, bitter fighting had followed. Markwell had nearly been stung twice, on both occasions by fighters he hadn't seen. Rackley knocked on the window and Markwell opened his eyes. The fitter mimed opening the lid and Markwell nodded, pulling off his breather and goggles.
The canopy lifted, and cool, fumy air blew in across Markwell's face. It let in the roar and whine of the field, too.
"Everything all right, sir?"
Rackley asked. 4A, Markwell replied as he was helped clear, and had his suit leads unplugged. "I need her turned around quick. We could go up again before evening."
"Understood, sir."
"I think the port las cannon needs cleaning or refitting. I was getting an odd fire pattern."
"I'll see to it, sir."
"Any chance of rockets?" Rackley shook his head.
"Between you and me, sir, munitions are getting pretty low. We're okay for hard rounds, but all the rack weapons are going to the marauders."
Markwell left the fitters to their work and walked out of the revetment shelter. At the mouth of the hardstand next door, Van Tull was stripping off his jacket and gloves. "Nice one," Markwell said. "I saw you sting that tormentor."
"Thanks," said Van Tull. "I thought the bastard was going to get past me for a moment."
"Any luck yourself?" Markwell shook his head.
"I thought I saw you on a razor."
"Yeah, but it slipped out and I lost it."
"There's always the next time," said Van Tull.
Zemek wandered up to join them. His lucky charms jingled about him on a new chain.
"What's that about?"
he asked, gesturing down the line of hardstands. A large staff limousine was approaching, pulling to a halt. The driver, a Navy cadet, got out, went around to the other side, and opened the rear door, saluting. A figure got out.
"That's the Apostles' chief, isn't it?" asked Van Tull.
"Seacan," said Markwell.
"What the hell does he want?"
said Zemek. They watched as Seacan crossed the number three stand. Ash was just dismounting from her bolt. She saluted Seacan, and was saluted back. Seacan began to speak and handed her something. A data slate, it looked like. Even from a distance, they could see the strange, startled look on Ash's face.
"What's going on?"
Zemek said. Seacan and Ash exchanged salutes again. Then Seacan shook her by the hand and returned to his car. As it carried him away off the field enclosure, Ash remained where she was, studying the slate. Markwell, Zemek, and Van Tull jogged down to her. Blanchard had appeared, and Ranfrey, Cordial, and Del Ruth were also approaching.
"Larice?"
Zemek said. She glanced up. There was such a strange look in her eyes. "Hey, Zem."
"What's going on? What did Seacan want?"
"Me," she said.
"What?"
She looked at them all for a moment.
"You're not going to believe this,"
she began.